Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Mylowe's Rewards members get a free Valspar paint or exterior stain sample to test your look to confidently refresh your space. Offer valid in-store only 87 to 820. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Rewards program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
You're listening to continuing coverage in the Las Vegas Reporter murder trial of Robert Telles from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Thank you, everyone. Please be seated. Please come to order. Court is now back in session.
Does the state stipulate to the presence of the panel?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the defense?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Fasbridge, you may begin your closing argument.
Thank you. Am I on? Proof beyond a reasonable doubt. It's the highest standard in this country. It's not presumption, preponderance of the evidence. It's not clear and convincing. It's proof beyond a reasonable doubt. This concept was borrowed from the old English common law. Our founding fathers thought that it'd be better to let let 10 guilty men go free than to wrongfully convict an innocent person. Additionally, I would submit to you that it reflects the reality that very few people have the resources, the means, the wherewithal to prove their innocence. You know, you heard testimony by narrative by the defendant, Mr. Telles. Generally, you don't discuss a person being in custody, but he testified truthfully from the stand concerning his incarceration. He had testified that he'd been in custody for 2 years and that he wanted to tell you his story. Jury instruction number 27 discusses a witness's manner upon the stand. You and you alone are to judge every witness's credibility. In jury instruction number 3, it states that you are to apply the law to the facts. As we had stated at the beginning of this trial, you are the sole judges of the facts in this case. We had asked you at the beginning if you would keep an open mind, and we're certain that you have. This case is not about who called the most witnesses. The state did. This case is not about who had the most exhibits presented to you. The state did. We had asked you that at the close of evidence and at the end of this trial, if we were to sit at counsel table with Mr. Tellis and not ask a single question, not discuss a single document, not to submit a single document, and if you had a doubt, and if a reasonable one, he'd be entitled to a verdict of not guilty. Let's talk for a minute what the state hasn't proven. And again, there is no burden whatsoever on that man. Jeff Gehrman's DNA wasn't anywhere but at the scene of the crime. And this is significant because we heard a very able explanation of the state's evidence from their point of view. There was no blood or DNA evidence concerning Mr. Gehrman in Mr. Tellis' home, in or on his vehicles, in or on his clothing. None of that would implicate Mr. Tellis. There had been discussion on the state's closing wherein there was blood everywhere in this, you know, in the Bronze Circle address. Obviously, it was a stabbing. You can see through the exhibits that you will have with you in the jury room, there was blood everywhere, on the bushes, on the bird dish. Nowhere in Mr. Tellis' vehicle do we find blood. You recall the testimony, blood presumptive negative on both doors on the driver's side, the seat belt, the brake pedal, the gas pedal, the mat, nothing. There was no blood on his person, clothing, anything else. You didn't hear from any witnesses concerning any personal knowledge to contradict Mr. Tellis' version of the events for September 2nd. There was not a positive identification of the subject vehicle or Mr. Tellis at the scene. There's no evidence whatsoever of any gloves being recovered. And you've seen, and it's fairly clear from the video evidence that you've been presented, that assailant was wearing gloves. There was no recovery of a murder weapon. That vest with the reflective strips, you didn't see that. And the pants, I mean, we had pants that were recovered. You saw the blue pants. Obviously, that didn't bear any evidence to implicate Mr. Tellis. And I would submit to you that the facts in common sense would dictate that had he been the murderer, there'd be evidence of it on these articles, on that getup that that person was wearing on September 2nd. This is a point that I would urge you to consider, because I would submit to you that's crucial in determining whether the state, and again, it's the state alone that bears the burden, has proven their case against Mr. Tellis. There's no surveillance or eyewitness testimony showing that Tellis left his house that day, headed to Mr. Gehrman's home. We did hear evidence, and it was uncontroverted, and that came through Detective Gaddis, that on the day of the stop, September 2nd, it's Metro policy to have body cam. The officers that stopped him in relation to the warrant that was obtained with Mr. Jappe's, Detective Jappe's participation, it was issued at 2 a.m. on the 7th. The officers that stopped Mr. Tellis, the officers that detained Mr. Tellis, didn't have the body cam on, and that was requested multiple times. Ultimately, there was an order from Her Honor on July 18th of 2023, and after that order. And you recall going through the cam, the reports, the CAD reports. There was intervention, but again, that key piece of evidence was overridden. It was destroyed. Again, is that indication of some wide-ranging conspiracy? And I'm not going to stand before you today and necessarily argue that there was. But what that shows is that Metro makes mistakes. Metro officers, Metro detectives are human. I mean, you know, you think of the old proverbial idea, police officers, they're brass buttons, blue uniforms, they're human beings underneath their titles, underneath their uniforms. And they're just like all of us. They make mistakes. That shows you that mistakes are made on behalf of Metro. And the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department is not infallible. Let's talk about Robert Tellis's blood, or the lack thereof, at the scene of the murder. You had seen some pretty good videos capturing that person leaving Jeff Gehrman's house after the stabbing. I would submit to you that it's the state's argument that Mr. Tellis cut himself through that incident. You heard his testimony. You are the sole judges of the facts concerning that. What we do have, in addition to the state's video, is we have this assailant walking away from the 7217 Broad Circle address. That finger was cut. That finger had been damaged by a knife or otherwise severely injured. Wouldn't there be blood? Wouldn't common sense dictate that there'd be blood in the bushes surrounding Jeff Gehrman's body, in the rocks which were recovered, in the sidewalk outside the house? Nothing. And again, it's the state's burden to present you every bit of evidence in their prosecution, and you should take into consideration the evidence that they've presented to you. But by the same token, you should take into consideration determining whether or not they have proved their case beyond a reasonable doubt, and they have the sole burden for the production of evidence. Ask yourselves what evidence is missing. Let's talk about Robert Tellis's body in relation to a struggle that the state would have you believe occurred between these two gentlemen. Recall the evidence that we had brought in during their presentation of evidence, and I believe a number of these pictures came through Detective Gaddis, and there's a lot. It's defense exhibits B through V. This is just kind of a capture of these photos, and there's a lot of them, to evidence that there were no injuries to his body. Neck, front, and there's more, and we could stand here and click through each and every one, but we're not going to. You can look at them. You can ask yourselves, well, if there was this struggle, where are the markings? Where's the bruising? Where are the scratches? Defense exhibits B through V will demonstrate that there were no such injuries. Let's talk about the cell phone usage on 9/2/2022. You know, the state would have you believe that Mr. Tellis's lack of responses to junk messages mean that he was occupied with murder, and through analyst Aguero, you heard, and you had the opportunity to see through the course of this gentleman's testimony, it was uncontroverted. We went through the messages during the key hours, the key times of September 2nd. The vast majority of those messages were automated. They were spam. How many of us respond to spam? It wasn't like he had every person reaching out to him, family, friends, repeatedly, where are you, what are you doing? It's not. The vast majority of those messages were of no significance. They were junk. Additionally, the state did not establish a pattern of phone use behavior which would indicate that Mr. Tellis' communication activity on that day was anything different than his normal behavior. They had the devices, they had the access. You heard no testimony that his accessing his phone, his using his phone on September 2nd was anything different than the day before, the day following, the weeks before, or the weeks following Mr. Gehrman's murder. And let's talk about the deleted messages. You recall that was quite a big point that was underscored and argued through the course of testimony, and it was actually through Mr. Aguero, our expert, the issue concerning this deleted message. And you recall then we had the subsequent witnesses in the state's rebuttal that came forward with the, and it was through Mr. Tellis's testimony. Do you remember the watch, the Apple Watch? Then there was questions asked, what about the other device that presumably these messages were being received on. We didn't get the benefit, and again, it's their burden to compare the Apple Watch with the Pixel phone. We didn't have that. But what we did hear from that detective is that he couldn't say one way or the other. Do you remember that question, where are you? Obviously, if someone's home, they can speak with one another. But we didn't hear and we couldn't hear any evidence. And for you to just make a judgment based upon their own expert, their own witness who has special training and knowledge, say, I couldn't say one way or the other whether that message was deleted on the Pixel device, the device that they have alleged was Mr. Tellis' phone, that's significant. Let's talk about what the state does have. They've got a cut-up straw hat and shoes. There's really no reasonable explanation, rational explanation, one way or the other. Obviously, if this person's the murderer, why not get rid of the shoes? You'd have to presume that he had knowledge of the shoes and their whereabouts. Let's talk about that hat. Why wasn't that hat discarded? Again, we'd have to presume knowledge on the part of Mr. Tellis where that hat was. And again, neither the shoes nor the hat tied him to Jeff Gehrman's residence. We had a shoulder bag with balls in it. You recall that exhibit? We had a basketball and a football, it looked like some sawdust, and you'll have all of these exhibits. What's going on with that? I guess you're to use your common sense, which is one of the latter instructions, and assume that this bag is somehow implicated in the murder of Jeff Gehrman. And then it winds up in a storage area in the family home with a basketball and a football, and what I would submit to you looks like sawdust in the middle of it. The image artifacts from the cache of Robert Tellis' phone, as well as the vehicle and the address inquiries on Mr. Tellis' work computer, it was fairly clear through the course of the testimony that that work computer had access to the Google account that would presumably be accessed by his Pixel phone. If one has password to that, one can have access to the devices. Matt Havaness said that he could not say the date of the cached images on the files of Mr. Tellis' Google Pixel phone. We were shown a calendar. We were to draw inferences. We don't know specifically who accessed, who searched for those images, and we don't know when they were created. And I would submit to you that that's significant, and the state should explain that to you. On Defense Exhibit 03, Robert Tellis' user accounts on Dell Omnipex located the public administrator's office. Again, this is the report. You have it. This is Mr. Aguero's summation of his analysis. Again, it shows that this Google account, where these damaging photos and images are shown, it's the same. It's the same account. It can be uploaded, accessed by both the cell phone and the work computer. Obviously, we know what was going on from the testimony of multiple witnesses, what was going on at the public administrator's office and the turmoil. I would submit that's something that you should consider and determine what the facts are and what the state has proven beyond a reasonable doubt. There is a positive DNA hit for Mr. Tellis related to Jeff Gehrman's fingernails. And you recall at the beginning of the state's presentation last week, you heard from the crime scene analysts, and I would submit to you that it was fairly clear that there was a little less than an airtight investigation because, after all, police officers, detectives, crime scene analysts make mistakes. Reference to the lab techs, Ms. Brown and Ms. Koljenovich, they were trainees at the time that they did this DNA collection and the processing for presumptive negative or presumptive positive blood evidence. This is significant. It was Claire Manning. She had testified she was young, blonde. She had testified that she couldn't recall who bagged the hands. That was at the scene of the murder. You never heard testimony as to who initially bagged the hands of Jeff Gehrman's body. One would think, and common sense would dictate, that they'd be able to tell you that. They couldn't, not from a single witness. She testified that she took custody both of the fingernails and the evidence concerning Mr. Tellis, but again, she couldn't tell you who bagged the hands. Again, this Google search on the recipe, you heard that this the last day of trial, like that was somehow significant. Do you recall in the recross of the detective, there was at least two computers at the Tellis home that were not reviewed? They weren't checked for those recipes. So again, I'd submit to you, we have a wash. Detective Mogg, Christopher Mogg, he's now retired. He's an analyst, he lives in Texas. You recall at the beginning of this trial, he gave what appeared to be fairly detailed testimony concerning the whereabouts of the subject, Denali. Do you recall on cross, it was addressed that at 9:10, that vehicle was entering in from the Piggott Elementary. And again, you saw the map, it's in evidence. You can see that this right here is not the entrance to Mr. Tellis's neighborhood. It's streets away, it's not close. He gave you testimony that apparently he drove through the neighborhood where Mr. Tellis lived, off the Spanish Steps address. He said to look for things of evidentiary value. We heard nothing. We heard nothing concerning other vehicles in the neighborhood. Do you recall the testimony that there was at least 67 red Denalis? We heard testimony that that number at one point perhaps was greater. Perhaps it was at 67, which nobody contradicted, but we never heard what it was ultimately narrowed down to. We had Detective Mogg, and I'll refer to him as Detective because in essence he still is. He testified and just said he was sure that it was that man's Denali, period. Do you recall the testimony that was shown concerning, and I would submit to you because you are the sole judges of the facts, that there was something peculiar about this Denali, something in the right hand window area, that plastic stripping. You have the photos. Please look at them. We are given testimony based upon his analysis. We have at the same part near Piggott Elementary, we have this vehicle leaving at 9:12:32. But what's significant about the 9:10 where we see it entering the neighborhood or the area? Again, it's not Mr. Tellis's specific neighborhood. We're not told where it was before that, who was driving it. What's important, and I want to back up, is at 9:10, we have this vehicle entering the area. And you have to ask yourself, what's occurring between 9:10 and 9:12? If we're to take the state based upon the evidence that they have presented, what went on during that 2 minutes and a few seconds? We don't know. Did it even make it to the Tellis' house or some other neighbor, other house in the area? But as to the 9:10, it's important because it's the state's theory, and we heard it argued that Mr. Tellis left his phone. Well, we have, and this is Defense Exhibit A3, we have that phone receiving messages. Look at the times all throughout the morning. We have that phone receiving messages 7:44, 7:45, 8:47. You can see, and this will be given to you, it's close to the cell tower next to Mr. Tellis's home. So then you have to ask, well, where was this vehicle? And I'd ask him specifically, did you follow this vehicle? Did you see this vehicle prior to the 9:10 time taken from Piggott? He didn't. But we can see based upon the evidence that was provided to you by the defense expert, that phone is in the area all that time. It's in the Spanish Steps area. So obviously the argument, and I would submit to you, common sense would dictate, well, if that is going to Mr. Tellis's home and it's not arriving in that area until 9:10, why do we have all of these other pings at all of these other times close to the home, if not at the home? He laid out very specific detail, and he had talked about this approximately 5.3-mile trek that he wants you to believe was Mr. Tellis's vehicle, and that vehicle was occupied by Mr. Tellis. His video analysis takes 2 hours. It covers 2 hours and 39 minutes. The state couldn't show you what happened during that 2 hour and 39 minute period. 5.3-mile trip to and from. You know, they basically show you closed circuit TV coverage, which it wasn't. There was a lot of dark spots of the vehicle driving there. But then the vehicle driving back, and I won't say it was driving to and from Tellis's home because we have no evidence of that. You know, we're to believe the state that there's no Ring cameras in a fairly affluent neighborhood. I'd submit to you, does that make any sense? What we're gonna ask you to look at, and please do, you know, you've done a lot through the course of this trial. It's your duty to be here, and you have fulfilled that duty. You've taken notes. Through the very last witness, it's been apparent that you've been paying attention, that you've maintained an open mind. You know, oftentimes people, we suffer, especially law enforcement, from what's called confirmation bias. You reach a judgment, sometimes early on in the case, and then you work backwards to confirm what the judgment that you've arrived at the beginning should be at the end. And I would submit to you that that's what happened. This was the 1405 Wintergreen. As you recall, there was an issue concerning the timing. This was channel 3, all right? This is State's Exhibit 372. You have that. You'll be given a laptop. Look at this. This was an image that was not part of his presentation to you at his testimony and during his testimony. This laptop has the ability to pause. It has the ability to zoom. Watch this. We're going to slow this down now. You have this evidence. It wasn't part of his presentation, but it's been provided to you. Look at the profile. What's that look like on the top of the head? I'd submit to you, that looks like hair. We've seen Mr. Tellis. He gave testimony from the witness stand. Does that profile match the profile in that vehicle? I mean, it's no secret. The man's bald. Look at the face. Look at the eyes. I'd submit to you that those look like glasses. And again, this is part of the evidence collected by the state. It's been presented to you. It wasn't addressed during their case in chief, and it wasn't explained by Detective Cliff Mogg. I'd submit to you, look at that image. There's hair. There's glasses. Now, the state in rebuttal, and we'll address the significance of that, they have the opportunity to come and address what I've presented to you, but that's undeniable. What I'm going to show you next is the image on channel 2. That's the same video coverage, but now it has the vehicle coming from a different direction. Parked. Do you remember the testimony from Mr. Martinez? I think it was John Martinez. Of no significance. It was fairly unmemorable on that date. He said he saw the person. Nothing caught his attention because nothing was memorable. There's no talk of a disguise. Glasses, nothing. It's bland. Nothing was memorable. Take a look. Oh, hang on. That's Mr. Martinez that I had discussed. Look at this image. Look at the profile. It's hair. We have two captures from two different angles. The profile does not match the profile of Mr. Tellis. And they're consistent. It's not open to dispute. You know, you've heard testimony and you heard it primarily through Mr. Tellis. You heard it from Nicole Lofton. Mr. Tellis was fairly concerned about the goings-on with Compass Realty in relation to heirs. In relation to the trampling upon the legacy of heirs by the mismanagement of the properties that were left through intestacy. I would submit to you that Detective Jaffe inserted himself into the murder investigation. And again, I want to draw, a couple of arguments from this Compass Realty testimony. I mean, we know that Mr. Tellis was very concerned about Compass Realty. He was the whistleblower. He was concerned about the actions of Compass Realty. You know, during the 2 years that he's in custody, I mean, what would a man do? He's fixated on that. He's ruminating on that. I would submit to you that common sense would dictate and your experience would dictate, well, he's going to focus on the involvement of individuals who he was focused on prior to his being arrested. I mean, really, what are his alternatives? And again, this goes back to the burden on the state and not the defense. What can he really do when he's locked up? He's going to focus on Compass Realty. It's easy to dismiss him as being crazy. Oh, that's Looney Tunes. But hey, he's been in custody for 2 years. He was worried about Compass Realty prior to being incarcerated. He was worried about the goings-on with the old guard, about his work at the public administrator's office for financial reasons. He testified concerning, and you've heard testimony supporting that. Why wouldn't he continue worrying about that? Why wouldn't he keep thinking, well, I'm being framed, I'm being charged with a murder that I don't think I committed, I didn't commit. He's going to focus on what he was focusing on before he was arrested. You know, we heard testimony from Detective Gaddis. Do you recall the exhibits, the information that was presented about the release on September 5th? The video release of that individual walking. They started getting tips. Do you recall the email that was in her 70-page officer's report where she had communicated with Detective Jaffe predating that? The first communication that we have on record and that's referenced is September 4th. Detective Jaffe, when asked, did you incriminate him? Did you give him, did you give her evidence implicating him in this crime? And he said, I gave her information. But then we heard from Detective Gaddis that she had a communication with him again on September 5th. And again, she was given motive. In Detective Jappy's mind, she was given motive to focus on that man and his alleged motive to kill Mr. Gehrman. Say he wouldn't agree from the stand that he implicated Mr. Tellis, but to call a detective or to email a detective on September 4th, and then again on September 5th and say, look at this guy, he's got a motive to kill, how could it be anything but an implication? You heard crime scene investigator Baxter. Her testimony concerned the goings-on at the public administrator's office during the execution of a warrant on September 8th of 2022. Her testimony, and it was adopted by Detective Gaddis, she stated Mr. Jappy, she said Detective Jappy, was taking his own photos and collecting his own evidence during the search warrant at the public administrator's office on September 8th. And it wasn't a mistake, because it was asked to her on cross, and it was confirmed what she had said before you, the sole judge of the fact, by Detective Gaddis, the primary detective concerning this homicide investigation. We had heard testimony that Mr. Tellis, as a result of the warrant obtained by Detective Jappy on August 17th, 2022, that man was under surveillance. It appears until Detective Jappy inserted himself into this investigation, we had dual investigations, a short one and a much longer one concerning Robert Tellis. We know from Detective Jappy's testimony that he was exonerated. There wasn't this kickback scheme. He had been implicated by an agent who was a real estate agent who was a detective at the time. That provided to Detective Jappy in part the probable cause to get that warrant. So we have a member of Metro giving another member of Metro evidence, testimony, opinions about a kickback scheme implicating Robert Tellis. We also had heard through testimony that Compass had a direct line into the public administration office. And again, I discussed Mr. Tellis as being incarcerated because I would submit to you it's understandable why he believes there's this wide-reaching conspiracy. What other options does he have in his circumstances, under these circumstances? We do know that the district attorney's office refused to pursue action against Compass Realty, and again, I'd submit to you that that's significant. You know, the purpose of closing argument is for counsel to stand before you and highlight the evidence that's been presented to you. I'm not going to stand here and go through every witness, discuss every piece of evidence and all the testimony, because you have been here. You have been attentive and you are fulfilling your duties. You're being good jurors. But again, my job is to argue the law and, in essence, the facts to you and what we feel is significant. As I said at the beginning of my remarks, it's the state's burden, and the state's burden alone, to prove this case beyond a reasonable doubt. This is our last opportunity to discuss matters and discuss the evidence and the inferences to be drawn from the evidence. Mr. Hamner now is going to take the floor and he's going to argue concerning matters that I perhaps didn't bring up. Address those on your own. Look at the evidence. You've got over 36 exhibits that were marked and admitted through the defense in this case. Watch the videos. Look at the drive concerning those images of that gentleman with hair, which Mr. Tellis does not have. But since the state carries the burden and the state alone, they get the opportunity to get two bites of the proverbial apple. Mr. Hamner now can stand and argue why you should convict Mr. Tellis. And I'm going to ask you, with your open minds and your attentiveness, to address those concerns. And at the close of this process, you find Mr. Tellis not guilty.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hamler, you may begin your rebuttal.
Yeah, if I can just get a minute just to set up.
Sure.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Everybody hear me okay?
All right. This is quite the setup. Okay. May I proceed?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, it's been 2 weeks. You guys have heard a lot of evidence. We thank you for your patience, and I will try to be as brief as I can. But as you've seen, with witness after witness after witness, the evidence is absolutely clear. The defendant murdered Jeff Gehrman. He murdered him because Jeff's writing destroyed his career. It destroyed his reputation. It threatened probably his marriage, exposed things that even he admitted he did not want the public to know. And he did it because Jeff wasn't done writing. He was informed on August 8th that a records request was being made by Mr. Gehrman long after he had lost the race, well into his lame duck remaining administration as a PA. And he learns that Jeff wants to write more. And when he learns about the subject of it, it's not about him and Alicia. It's not about him and Rita. It's not about anybody except him and Roberta. And what you see unfolds over the course of a month. We learn from his phone expert that he shut off all location data, even though that phone, as we learn from his expert, 13 years of location data magically disappears for the month of August. Why? Because of the August 8th email. He's over it. He's building a reconnaissance case. He starts to go onto Google Maps. He starts doing surveillance at Popeyes. He is using the power of his office and their computer software to find private details about Jeff so it can culminate in murdering him. And that's what he does. But as I've told many, many juries, especially in the last few years, it is really, really hard to plan the perfect murder in the digital age because you leave too many breadcrumbs behind. And he's no dummy. He's actually quite smart. He is thoughtful. But you will see during this rebuttal, there are mistakes that he makes. And there are things that he simply cannot account for that when a police starts to look into an investigation and deploys the tools that the police have at their disposal, it uncovers the inconsistencies. It uncovers his mistakes. But I gotta start with what he got up and told us about. The alleged conspiracy. When Mr. Catalis got up here over the course of, I think it was 3 days and testified, it was remarkable what he had to say, and not in a good way. His testimony was incredible, and not in a good way. He explained, or at least attempted to, explained this conspiracy. What we learned over the course of the 3 days, and actually the course of this trial over 3 weeks, is the conspiracy grew, and it grew, and it grew. Who's exactly in it? It starts with Compass, nebulously Compass Realty. We learn that Adam Fenn can't be ruled out, right? Because he makes donations to Rita Reed. Cindy Sauerland gets mentioned at one point. In some of those briefings, you'll see her name is mentioned. She's a source of consternation for the defendant. It expands to the old guard, as they coin that phrase. Rita Reed, Alicia Goodwin are all part of this, right? The conspiracy, and let's remember, it's a conspiracy to murder Jeff Gehrman. We then learn it expands to Derek Jappe. He's in on it as well. When he testified, he's not really able to link up why Derek Jappe would want to help Rita Reed or Alicia Goodwin or Compass Realty or Adam Fenn or Cindy Sauerland. That testimony is lacking. A lot of times when I pressed him, and oh, I pressed him, and I'm going to explain to you one of the reasons why I cross-examined him so hard. When you stand on the stand under oath and you make allegations about businesses in our community, government service workers, and the police department, we deserve answers. I genuinely wanted to know, how is all this connecting? Explain it to me. And respectfully, Mr. Tellis absolutely failed in doing so. It didn't make sense. And that is one of your instructions, which is to use your common sense. It's got to make sense, and it actually has to link up with evidence. But a lot of times, the most common answer I would get back from Mr. Tellis was simply, well, you know, no, I never saw Jappe take a bribe, but I think that. It was a lot of times just like, that's just my gut feeling. That's my opinion. That's not evidence. That is not evidence. But yet, it was Mr. Tellis's answer for almost everything when it came to this conspiracy. But let's continue. It stretches out to include Cliff Mogg, Justine Gaddis, the entire DNA lab. He said there were also patrol officers in it. I asked him which patrol, I don't know which ones. And then it literally culminates with Steve Wolfson, like the DA. It culminated with him. He can't quite link it up, but he threw that name out there. And here's the thing that struck me when I took over this case. I would submit to most people, probably before ever hearing about this case, had no idea what a public administrator was. He is not a U.S. senator. He is not a governor. He is not a congressperson. He is a duly elected official who manages an office of approximately 8 people. And their job is to assist people who pass away, who don't leave a will and leave property behind. The public administrator's office is not at the forefront of everyone's mind in this community. No one learns about this until who brings the office to light? Jeff Gehrman. And what's amazing is if you believe that story about this conspiracy, all of these people and all of these entities were willing to sacrifice their reputation, their business, their police department, even the public administrator's office. They're all willing to put it on the line to kill a reporter, to get that guy, even though he's leaving in 3 months. Does that make a shred of sense? Absolutely not. But what it does give you a window into is what's in his mind. That is how important Mr. Tellis views himself. That every single one of these people, every single one of these entities were literally willing to kill another human being who is not him, just to frame him. Does that make sense? And more importantly, where is the evidence to support that? Where is the evidence that you received in this trial that supports that? And the answer is, you didn't. There isn't any evidence of that. Why would Compass conspire to frame him? Why? I asked him. I wanted to know. He couldn't give a good answer. His best answer was, well, I was going to do a lot of work in the next 3 weeks or next 3 months. Has anyone ever heard of any sort of legal filings, lawsuits getting settled up in a brief, tidy 3 months? That's not a thing. That didn't happen. That doesn't happen. There was no need to frame him because they already succeeded getting him voted out of office. And all they had to do was donate a whopping, I guess, $15,000 at best to get him out of office. They didn't need to kill him. He was on his way out the door. He is a lame duck. And lame ducks don't matter. What incentive does Metro have in this conspiracy with a real estate company to frame a lame duck? That's an even bigger one. Why would they do that? What did we hear that would show us that Compass is like, hey, guess what? Hey, Metro Homicide, we need you to join us to go frame this outgoing politician. I mean, we killed the reporter. That's not important. But I want you to join us in this, and let's go frame this guy. And all of Metro's like, sign me up. Sounds great. Does that make any sense? Absolutely not. It makes no sense. And it's not supported by the evidence. And again, if Compass is literally willing to kill, why not just kill him? Just kill him. Why does Jeff have to suffer? It makes no sense. And it gets even worse. Well, before we get to that, here's the thing. When we go back, when you think about the Compass question, right? Isn't Compass in cahoots with Rita Reed and Alicia Goodwin, right? They're funding Alicia Goodwin, right? Or no, Rita Reed. They're funding her campaign against him.
And who do they get to help write the story? Jeff Gehrman. Like, why would they kill the guy who wrote the stories that got this guy out of office? Why would Compass do that? That doesn't make sense. And then, yeah, if it's really a frame job, the murder weapon should have been in the house. The orange shirt should have been in the house. The DNA should have been all over the place. Like, they're claiming, you know, well, why weren't these things located? The state would submit to you, he got rid of them. He got rid of the murder weapon in the orange shirt. He cleaned the outside of his Yukon. He even admitted it. And here's the thing. We only know that he wiped down his Yukon because on that one particular day, he was being watched. He wasn't watched every single day after the murder by Metro. Did you hear that testimony? There were other days he could have wiped the interior of his car if he wished. And I've always thought about the shoes. Like, the shoes to me was kind of an interesting one. My co-counsel's right. Like, the only one who benefits of, like, chopping up the shoes is Mr. Tellis. It's this awkward, amateurish way of getting kind of rid of the evidence. But I thought to myself, maybe Mr. Tellis didn't even think to, like, bring an extra pair of shoes. Because, like, what happens if he walks in and he's totally barefoot? His wife would be like, why do you have no shoes on? He probably had to bring his shoes back in. He doesn't need the orange shirt. He doesn't need the murder weapon. It is his kid's bag, right? I mean, he said that's my kid's sports bag. So, like, he probably needed to bring that back. I'm not sure what he was doing with the hat, I'll admit. But clearly he's chopping it up to try to get rid of it, just like his shoes. And why kill Jeff? But this is the question that is so destructive to this defense. It's his writing that shines a light on his behavior. He is sought out by the co-conspirators to do this. And he admits, and he admitted on the stand, one of the rare times he admits it, he admitted, yeah, his writing was the difference in the election. That's why I lost. I got that out of him. He was at least willing to concede that. But for Jeff Gehrman, he's still a public administrator. His writing is why the defendant is out of the job. And therefore, under this theory, he's got to be the one who's killed. That's his reward. He's collateral damage. Like, really? Rita and Alicia are like, sorry, Jeff, you got to go. It's been really nice. Thanks for the help. But you're out now. We got to clean up loose. I mean, is that really what's being suggested here? And the answer is that is what he's suggesting. But it defies common sense. And it's not supported by the evidence. And here's the other thing. Jeff's putting together a fifth article. And now what we can tell from the records real quick, it's just about Roberta and him. It's the salacious stuff. So who in this realm, if you think about everyone in the conspiracy, and you think about Mr. Tellis, who's the one that wouldn't want another article written about him engaging in an affair? You think Derek Jappe cares? Cliff Mogg? Adam Fenn? No. It's him. He's the only one that would have a stake in making sure that article never got written. No one in the conspiracy would want to prevent that coming out. Especially not the Rita Reeds and the Alicia Goodwins. If they want that exposed, I mean, they went to have that exposed. They wouldn't want that being not put out. And I'm sure Compass Realty wouldn't either. I'm sure they would wanted him discredited. Like, another article would in theory be great. They wouldn't have killed him. And then we have his walk.
More continuing coverage in the Las Vegas Reporter murder trial of Robert Tellez is on the way. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today, press subscribe now.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Cunahan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody. Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have Leaf Filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A Leaf Filter Trusted Pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install Leaf Filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, Leaf Filter Trusted Pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.